You think that my son is this person the soldiers are calling the zombie takeout?
Yes.
What's up? Welcome to episode 95 of Zombie Takeout,
Zombie Takeout.
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And this week, well, before we get to this week, we have a bit of listener submitted and some news. In listener submitted, first up, John Phillips from our website about Anvil. He says, "You ask why Anvil never made it big. You think that it was because he used a vibrator to play his guitar?" And I replied, "You may have a point, John. Reeves Cabral from Tin Machine did the same thing, possibly before Anvil. And they never really made it big either. I was being a little facetious because I think Tin Machine made it a little bigger than Anvil."
Oh, not at all.
You don't think so? Well,
No, it was Bowie. I mean, come on. Bowie.
they would never have gotten as big as they were if it weren't for Bowie, of course.
They would have never made a second album if it wasn't for
No,
Bowie.
no. He's the only reason anybody cared about them, but
It was his pet little project that he, spent money on. Don't get me wrong, I love Tin Machine.
Of course.
What's our next item?
This is from Roberto Suarez from Trailer Clash. "Hey guys, I meant to post this last week. Just wanted to make sure you'd seen this brilliant parody of the original Planet of the Apes. Now you saw this on Facebook?"
Yes, I did.
It'll be in the show notes. It's first off, it's hilarious. It's also a really impressive, I want to say photoshopping, but it's film, so it's not photoshopping. But they add things to the movie. Like they
Yeah.
edit it so that, various people are dancing. It's hilarious and brilliantly done.
I don't think you've really lived until you've seen Charlton Heston dancing and
Well,
scratching.
in underwear that looked like they were fashioned from a disco ball.
Yes. I think we've given them enough of a taste.
Yes.
You have to see it yourself.
On to the news. Dog Soldiers gets a web series. This is from liveforfilms.com. Based on a modern-day version of Little Red Riding Hood, Dog Soldiers Red was filmed in Northwest Arkansas in the last week of last August. Kismet Entertainment Vice President D. Eric Allen, who produced the teaser and is the oldest son of David E. Allen, producer and financier of the original, said the trailer brings back a sense of the unique werewolf style that we had all come to love from the original Dog Soldiers film. It's unknown if Neil Marshall had anything to do with it, and the article also says that Kismet Entertainment is in the early stages of pre-production for the first sequel to the 2002 cult hit.
Now, the trailer itself is just, it's a the height of absurdity.
It's a teaser. It's basically a girl walking through the woods getting attacked by one of the wolves from Dog Soldiers.
Getting dismembered pretty much,
Yes.
and she's still like screaming after like
She's
body parts are
literally
like taken
disemboweled.
off.
Yeah.
But it's kind of tongue in cheek, so
It is.
it's Dog Soldiers.
The wolves look just like they did in the original. The gore is just as good as it was in the original. I just don't know if the idea of dog soldiers can play without the military angle.
But the fact that they're doing it from Little Red Riding Hood
Yeah.
is funny as hell.
This is true. If they go comedy, I can definitely see it working. We
And
have to wait to see more.
that trailer looked like they were. I don't know about this movie, though. What do we know about the movie that's coming out?
That's all we know. Early stages of production, pre-production. I have a feeling it's going to be the one survivor. The one guy who made it out alive, coming, trying to get some kind of revenge, or they happen to attack somewhere else where he happens to be, or,
How can the same thing happen to the same guy twice?
I can't see where else they'd go with a sequel that would be at all tied to the original. Because there really was just the one guy.
Yeah, just do a separate story is really what it comes down
Yeah,
to.
but that's a separate werewolf movie, which would be fine. It could be just as good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not without Neil Marshall, but it wouldn't necessarily be a sequel.
Right.
But I'd like to see, you know, well, I don't know if I'd necessarily even want to see Marshall do another werewolf movie. I'd like to see, of course, something on that caliber because I love Dog Soldiers.
Yeah.
Next story, and this is a good one. John Malkovich may play the villain in zombie romance story Warm Bodies. This is from Sucker for Blunt, of course. We talked about Warm Bodies a week or two ago. It's the one Rob Corddry is going to be in. John Malkovich, last seen in this past summer's Transformers Dark of the Moon, is now in talks for a part in Warm Bodies. He'll play a character named General Grigio, a man obsessed with the destruction of the zombie threat, and presumably the film's principal villain. So he's going to be the one leading the human resistance.
I had just seen Art School Confidential from, it was actually from a few years back, but I just got to see it a few weeks ago, and he was just absolutely brilliant in it. And I think this is going to be one zombie movie that I'm going to have to see, maybe even in the theater. Corddry and Malkovich in it.
This is what sold me on it, because, like I said, I'm not that familiar with Rob Corddry. I like the concept. You throw Malkovich in there, I have to see it, because he's another one of those actors who can do no wrong, in my
opinion. That is a big Jim Slade shy of perfection.
Yeah. And our final story. Gerald McRaney added to Django Unchained. Samuel L. Jackson finally confirmed. This one from Slash Film. Gerald McRaney, best known as Rick Simon in Simon and Simon, has been added to the roster of Tarantino's Django Unchained.
What? Nobody's best known for Simon and Simon.
Can you think of anything else he's... No, well, okay, maybe Major Dad. It's unknown what role he'll play, but there are a couple of parts in the script the actor could take. None of them are that very large. In addition, this is the good part, Variety confirms that Samuel L. Jackson will indeed play Stephen, the head house slave to villain Calvin Candy, played by Leonardo DiCaprio. He's had the role, as far as we know, from almost the first moment Django Unchained was announced, but since the script has Stephen and Candy at about the same age, and DiCaprio is quite a bit younger than Jackson, We wondered if there'd be any rewrites. Apparently not, and Jackson is in the movie. So we're looking at Jackson, DiCaprio, who has won me over in his last few movies.
DiCaprio, you want to hate him, but
I used to hate him after Blood Diamond and, of course, Inception. I'm a fan now. This is going, and we've got Gerald McRaney and Costner in some role.
I mean, people forget he, you know, did Basketball Diaries.
Oh yes,
you know,
yes. I can't hold that against Basketball Diaries. Is brilliant.
He's done some crazy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one Woody Allen movie where he's just, you know, supposedly playing himself, but mm-hmm. he's just this complete asshole. I mean,
and of
funny
course,
as hell.
Of course, Gilbert Grape.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody remembers Titanic and Romeo and Juliet. At least those are the two that annoyed me enough to hate him for several years. But no, Django Unchained is looking great, too.
But, you know, he did Titanic, and he never has to worry about a paycheck again.
This is true.
He can pretty much go and, you know, do whatever he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
He just winds up doing stuff like Inception, though.
Well, I think you've actually stumbled upon why he's doing much better work now. Because he doesn't have to worry about the money.
Exactly.
He does what he wants to do, and he's so far made some great choices in terms of roles.
Right.
So on to this week's movie.
On to this week's movie.
Now, before we get to the plot summary, just a little note. The pronunciation of certain names was changed from the series to the movie. This movie is based on a series. I don't recognize the changed pronunciations.
All right.
So I will be pronouncing certain names differently and possibly correcting you throughout the show. Just wanted to mention that.
Sure.
The movie is The Last Airbender from two...
You realize you're taking this cartoon just a little too seriously.
We'll get into that.
It's Bugs Bunny, damn it, not Boogs Bunny.
You haven't seen it.
Oh, anyway, the
It is
impromptu.
The Last Airbender from 2010, which brings us to the impromptu plot summary, brought to you by Career Suicide. Are you tired of each new movie that you make being unfavorably compared to your first successful movie? Has your trademark twist ending, that you ripped off from The Twilight Zone, become a bit of a joke? Then try Career Suicide. It's the honorable thing to do.
So we have a sort of a. I'm not familiar why they're called nomads when they pretty much have their part of the planet that they stay on.
There are four temples: northern, southern, eastern, and western, at least in the
Right.
series.
Right. So we have these four tribes or nations or whatever you want to call them. They
Yes.
call them nomads for some
Well, no,
unknown
it's
reason.
the air nomads are the only nomads.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't get that. I thought they were all four
No.
of them were, and it didn't make any sense. But
They're
even the air nomads had a
it's
set tower temple
well, they have
that
four.
nomads would never have built.
Yes, fair.
You have these four elemental nations representing, earth, water, fire. Although, didn't water have two?
They
Water
had
had a
two
north
tribes, but
and a south kingdom kind of thing.
well, they had the northern tribe and the southern tribe.
Okay. So, you had the four of them. However, there is one person who is an avatar who, well, of course, would be, I guess, the representative of God,
The spirit world,
the
sort
spirit
of thing,
world,
sort of this, the spiritual element of their world, of this universe.
would send a person down who can bend all four elements, who has the ability to.
Yes.
And they weren't really clear about each person that, well, there are benders of each element.
Yes.
They weren't clear as to how the person would get this, whether it was hereditary.
In the series, they establish that you're born with it.
Yeah,
And a
that's kind of what I was
certain
gathering out of it.
number of people in each nation, or each, nation works, in each nation, are born with the ability. Not everybody is.
Now, there's the one person who is the avatar who can do all four, and when he's told this, this is half, of course, happens before the movie actually begins. Just doing a little bit of backstory here. He's told this, and he's told that his life will never be normal. He'll have to, pretty much live a life of solitude in some way or another. He pretty much says, "Fuck no," and runs out the runs away. Somehow gets trapped in an ice bubble, which I imagine we may find out at a later date. I don't know. You don't find out in this movie why, but I'm assuming that that's going to happen in one of the sequels that you
Un
know there's
if
going to
yeah, unlikely, but
be.
we'll get to that later.
They've obviously set this up as a trilogy, because the object, when he's freed from this, he has to learn how to bend the other elements. He can bend the air, and he's the last airbender because all of his people have been wiped out by the five people who were the Fire Nation, and he has to master the other elements so he can bring balance to the force. I mean, to the elements. To the elements. He has to bring balance to the elements. It's his fault, really, that the balance has fallen out because he wasn't there and he shirked his responsibilities. It's when the Fire Nation took advantage of this and began to, go on a mission of genocide. And they're in the process of this movie, I mean, because they've already wiped out the air people, and now they're attempting to enslave and wipe out the earth and the
Kingdom.
water tribes.
Yes.
So what we have in this movie, we have the kid. He first meets a waterbender because, well, he comes out of the ice. What he was doing up there, don't know. The water bender's that's his her brother.
Well, no, she's the bender. He's not.
She's the bender. She's got a brother who's kind of the warrior kind of guy.
They were fishing when they found him.
She's playing around with the water. They're fishing, and then of course they wind up. Well, that's really the the main three, isn't it?
And they eventually go off to find the Northern Water Tribe, which is much bigger, and so that they can find waterbending masters, and
Yes.
along the way have adventures.
Right. The whole point is he's got it. For this movie, he has to master the waterbending element, and then of course, the next one, I believe they said, would be the earth,
Yes.
and then the last one would be the fire. And really, it's pretty much it. Hilarity ensues.
Now,
So.
well, before we get into it, just to set the stage, just to explain where we're coming from, I am a rabid evangelical fan of the series. It is, in my opinion, a nearly perfect masterpiece. You've never seen it.
No.
And for the purposes of the review, I will try to avoid comparing it too much to the series, just because if I did, the episode would be 6 hours of me ranting and probably threatening Shyamalan's life at some point. So I actually watched it as if the series didn't exist.
And that's the way to do it here. You know, they're separate things altogether. You know, like the same thing I'd said, I don't know how many episodes ago, about video game movies. It's a different medium, it's a different work of art altogether.
Although you also, when I said I'm a fanatical literalist about books, you said that's a different story. It's an existing story, whereas with games, the stories aren't necessarily great because you're playing them. It's not about the story, it's about the playing. This is an existing story.
True.
Like a, as if it, in fact they're, the seasons are named Book 1, 2, and 3.
Right, and they're going from animation though to a movie. And they really couldn't take about, what would it be, 7 hours of
Well,
story.
it had to be cut down, of course. It's, it's, let's see, 20 minutes per episode, 20 episodes, so yeah, whatever the math is. Of course, you have to cut things down. However, I think it could have gone longer. The running time is about 1 hour 40. And look at the prequels. They have about the same audience, and they're 2.5 hours each.
And I remember reading this from your review, and that was I was I gasped. I was, God, no, it couldn't have been longer.
If it had been done better, and I think longer would have filled in more of the story, and it would have made a bit more sense at points. Of course, the fact that it's written poorly and acted even worse in most cases doesn't help.
Yeah.
Ideally, with a better cast and better writing, it could have gone 2.5 hours, and that it wouldn't have bored the audience, is my point.
And I was thinking it would have been an awesome goof for me to have come on here today going, man, did you see that? That was awesome. The part where they had the
Was half expecting it.
when Aang's eyes lit up and stuff, oh,
You pronounced it correctly and you've never seen the series. I'm shocked.
I don't know. It's Aang. So I'm kind of, I pronounce things as I read them phonetically rather than just
In
like
the series,
whatever.
it's Aang, Iroh, and Sokka. Are those are the ones they changed. And of course, Avatar, which, I mean, okay, then his reasoning is that would be the correct Asian pronunciation of those names. But
Now, briefly.
when you have source material, the source material is the correct pronunciation.
Yeah. Now, about the series itself. It's not American produced, is it?
Yes, it
I
is.
mean, the original series was originally produced in America? This
Created
isn't.
by Mike DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, two Americans. A lot of the
Really?
animation was done overseas because that's what they do. But
Well,
yeah,
yeah, everybody does that.
it was written and directed, and all the actors were American. Yeah.
I mean, Citizens of the South Park or.
Except for Mako, who did the voice of Iroh. He's obviously, it was naturalized, but everybody else was born American.
So then, I'm not sure what the outrage about the race thing was with this.
Because the it's well, the whole race bending issue, there were a lot of most of the cast is white.
Yeah. Well, not really.
Most of it. Well, not all. Most, I would say. Well, actually,
Dev
no.
Patel, Asif
You're right, you're
Mani,
right.
Noah Ringer is, I don't know what he is, if he's like Asian Mexican
I
or
don't
something,
I'm not
Asian
sure about him. I
Hispanic.
think he's Caucasian. The leads at least are white. And there were issues with a lot of people saying he should have cast Asian actors. because even though it's set in a fantasy world, it is clearly based in Asian culture. A lot of the, anytime you see writing in the series, it's Asian. All of the names are Asian. So
the mythology is pretty much taken from Buddhism, though, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in some respects. It's, I mean, it's a typical hero's journey.
So for an Indian, you know, actors to come in, you know, so I was watching it thinking, well, you know, there are some Asian actors in here. They're in bit parts and stuff.
Yeah, and then the Fire Nation, which I found interesting. They're all Indian or from that area of the world, Indian subcontinent.
And only Shyamalan could get away with that, an Indian director.
Yeah.
But there's not a single damn black person in the whole movie.
Yes, yes. Yatsa, his teacher.
Huh? Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, there's one. All right.
Which made no sense. That had to be just a clearly a token move, because why would you...
He has a yellow tee on his robe.
Why would you stick a random African-American actor into it?
Okay, I forgot about that. I was thinking, if there's any racial problem with this, it's that he really didn't cast any black people. the acting I found... was, wow, what a mixed bag.
Yes. Okay. Well, I was actually very impressed with Dev Patel and Sean Taub, who played Ira.
I like Asif Mandavi.
Okay, who did he play?
Zhao.
Yeah, he was good. The character was very wrong. In the series, Zhao is a rage-filled megalomaniac. But his performance was solid. I think pretty much everybody in the Fire Nation, if you disregard the series and just look at the performances, they were good.
Right. I mean, he was just this, you know, he's a bureaucrat. Mm-hmm. He's the middle management. He's pretty much Darth Vader, if you think about it, because mm-hmm. that's what Darth Vader was. He was, you know, the middle management guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was just trying to keep his head about him, literally.
Yeah. And then you have our heroes, who you spend most of the movie with. First off, Noah Ringer is not an actor. He's a martial artist.
Yeah.
I think if you, you know, even given his age, you could have found a young actor who could have been taught the choreography.
He's not the one I was really gasping about.
I'm just starting with
you're
him.
Sighing about. He, you know, his performance, it was god-awful in some parts, decent in other parts, and believable in other parts.
At least he showed some emotion.
he did show emotion in parts, and then there were other parts where he just wasn't consistent was his problem.
No. At one point, when he's... I mentioned this in my review, when he was worried about, you know, going back to his temple, his, you know, where he was raised, and he looked happy. The lines expressed, you know, concern, and yet he was happy. He was smiling. But no, the real issue with the acting... Okay, Nicole Peltz, who played Katara, was just kind of annoying.
Well, wait a minute. About Noah Ringer's performance, though, and I think I've said this in past episodes, when you see an actor give such a wildly inconsistent performance, regardless of age, it's not really as much the fault of the actor... It is the director.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because the director has to be looking at the dailies and seeing the performance he's getting out of them.
And he should be correcting.
Right, unless your name is Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Or you're on some sort of crazy limited budget where you can't reshoot a take, which I don't think Shyamalan was.
No.
It's his responsibility to say, look, dude, you got to do it more like this. Now, Nicola Peltz.
She was the real problem for you?
No.
Okay, good.
She was bad. She wasn't as wildly inconsistent. No. She was just sort of blah.
Blah, kind of annoying. The voiceovers irritated the hell out of me. She has voiceover narrations that fill in a lot of the action.
There are parts, though, where she does get crossroads bad.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There are parts. I think the worst of the group, Jackson Rathbone?
Absolutely.
Holy
he was a bloody robot.
Shit. What did I write my notes when I was watching a scene with them? I said, just remember this when we do episode 100.
Yeah.
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
And the thing is, his performance was robotic. He literally sounded like he was standing there reading a script he'd never seen before.
He made Christensen look like Olivier. He made Hamill look like Olivier.
And yet, the character, Sokka, is the comic relief in the show. Complete mismatch there.
Yeah. No, I don't. I was probably going to bring this up later, but since you've brought it up now, for taking from your review from your essay earlier, the problem you had a problem with them taking away the humor from the show.
Yes.
I don't think that was such a bad idea, though.
Given the cast, since that's what we're discussing, you're probably right.
I think it would have been all over the place. I don't think people would have quite gotten it. I think it would have been, I don't think it would have, it would have been even more incoherent.
Do you mean with this cast or in general?
I think in general,
Well.
I think there is another problem lying here, which I guess we'll get to later, but. But taking the humor out, I think, was enough to make it. I mean, because think about it, he had to cut somewhere.
Yeah, but that's what makes it what it is. That's the genius of the series, and it's a lot of, like I said, it's a lot of the anime roots. Because anime series, I know you're not too familiar with the series anime,
Yeah.
they start off often very slapstick and get deadly serious by the end. Over, say 12 episodes. And that's a nod to its roots. It starts off very light, very kiddie. And it gets, by the end of the third season, extremely dark. And I think throwing in some of that humor, which is more prominent in the first season, it's what sets the show apart. If it's just a straight hero's journey, dark, plotting story, it's not that interesting.
I think he has an interesting story here. I mean, even what he's clipped away without it, I think at the heart of this, there's an interesting story that could have been told, but alas, was
Has
not.
been, but over 20 episodes.
Well, right. No, but I think this could have been, as it
Oh,
was,
yeah.
the script in hand. And at first I was thinking, it was just the writing that really sucked and it was Shyamalan's, but I think it might be the other way around. I think his writing might not have been so bad as his directing in this one.
Possibly. Okay. Yeah, because there are scenes, like I said, I enjoyed. All of the Zuko and Iroh stuff, I pretty much liked. And there you have a much higher class of acting. But I think that it can't just be the performances. The writing had to be halfway decent there too.
Yeah, it's okay. Here's my problem with this. What could have been a really good film. Nobody dies.
Well, no, at the end, one character does die.
One fucking person
Yeah.
dies.
But it's also the beginning of a trilogy.
Oh,
How many
no.
do you want to kill it that early?
I'm not even talking major characters
Oh,
die.
okay.
Think about this. This is a
Well.
story of genocide.
Yeah.
Right? He wanted to do this for kids and stuff. But by taking the actual brutality and grit of war away from it, of sanitizing it, is way more dangerous than actually exposing kids to
Absolutely.
violence.
Absolutely.
And I think the funniest scene in this whole movie, I mean, I just died, lost it laughing, was after they had killed the moon spirit, and there was this huge battle that was raging, and of course, he's watching it, Aang is watching it in slow
Yes.
motion, and if you just really watch the battle, there's nobody dying. There's not one fucking body
No.
or drop of blood on the ground. It's just people punching and kicking, a little bit of random sword play.
And just this is a bit big spoiler if you're interested, if you're going to be watching the series, which of course I would recommend. The way that goes down in the series, which would admittedly would not have worked live action, Aang transforms into a giant water creature and pretty much slaughters every Fire Nation soldier in the place.
Wow. But could you imagine if someone tried to make a children's version of Saving Private Ryan and no one died on Omaha Beach?
Yeah.
There were just, you know, people got knocked out or something, or, you know, oh, you know, what, okay. But yeah, huge battle. Not a single person gets it. And I mean, I'm not looking for major characters to go down, okay, because I understand it's the beginning of a trilogy.
Oh, and there were two, by the way. I forgot about one of them.
There was a second death?
Oh, what the hell? I can't recommend watching the movie. I'm just going to spoil. Zhao. And
well,
Yui.
Yeah.
Yui. She becomes the moon spirit, but she dies.
Oh, she really did die?
At least in the series, she dies. She literally becomes the moon spirit.
Because they weren't
they didn't
quite
get
clear.
Put that across in the series, in the movie. Like, they don't quite put a lot of things across.
They didn't quite make that clear if she was dead or not, because there were times where people went down and you thought they had died, and there's a couple of scenes later where they're back up, and you're just like, oh, all right, well, that kind of would have been pretty cool if that person actually had, that was their death, you know? That would have been kind of a neat, you know, part of the story. But yeah, it's, I mean, this is a story about war and genocide, and it's completely sugar-coated.
Yeah. Much more so than in the cartoon. Think about that.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what he was getting at here. I mean, I know he wanted to make this that could appeal to a broad audience, but he didn't want to, you know, have any violence.
Also, speaking of sugarcoating, not necessarily in the, well, a little bit in the violence sense, Zuko has a scar over his left eye.
Yeah.
Very subtle in the movie. In the show, it goes from above his eyebrow, past his ear, down onto his cheek. And it's a big brown scar.
Well, they bend over backwards to make him a sympathetic character, because you know he needed somebody to, you know, someone eventually to help him as a, you know, become a firebender. And I'm assuming it's either going to be him or his uncle.
I won't answer that question, but in the series, he is not at all sympathetic at this point.
Right.
He's the big bad for the vast majority of the season. Zhao only shows up occasionally.
So yeah.
You hate him for the most of this, up until the third season.
Yeah, but they make him a sympathetic character, so his turning is kind of a foregone conclusion, and you're not really all that surprised by it.
In the, again, another mistake Shyamalan made, he made that too obvious. You don't see it coming in the series.
Yeah.
Because he is just despicable up until it happened, up until the third season. That's when he's, actually in the later second season is when he starts turning.
I did like the uncle, the actor that played him, Sean Taub.
I think, I've been saying, him and Dev Patel did a great job. The characterization was good, wasn't quite as interesting as the series, but Taub did amazing things with what he was given. I actually checked his IMDb because I want to see him in other things now.
And shout out to a Chicago actor, a fucking awesome Chicago actor that played Master, is it Paku?
Paku.
Francis Guinan.
Okay.
I have seen him in tons of stuff around here, and he's just, he's the guy.
Okay. That's also one of my issues. The whole Northern Water Tribe thing is four episodes in the series.
Yeah.
And there's a major arc with Katara. Paku won't train her because she's a girl. And it's another moment where she proves herself and proves how tough she is. And given what you've just said about the actor, I would have loved to have seen them love it if he left some of that in, so the actor could have been given more than what basically amounted to a cameo.
Yeah, that was my problem with it. They didn't have enough of him in here. I mean, this guy is an incredible actor. And you know, I've seen him do stuff with John Mahoney William Peterson, and just awesome stuff. And yeah, he was like, what, three scenes pretty much in here?
and maybe three lines.
Blink and you'll miss him.
Yeah.
And of course, you have to see him under like the hair plugs and the
Which ended up
facial
making
hair.
him look like Billy Connolly.
Yes, it did. That's who I was kind of looking for in here. I was like, why couldn't they have gotten Billy Connolly too? Oh, well.
And I mentioned that those scenes, they take away a big character moment for Katara. Another bit that does is when they get to the Earthbender prison early on. She's the one who rallies them to fight back, not Aang.
I'm not sure why they would change that.
I don't know either. Unless they want to establish Aang as the hero, but...
Yeah, that's the only thing I could think of.
They stole a major character moment from her, but also there is a major logical issue there. And I say I'm not comparing it to the series. I am, I guess. I'm, you know, stepping away from that plan. In the series, they're out on a rig in the middle of the ocean. The whole thing is metal. Nobody can bend.
Oh.
In the movie, they're surrounded by dirt and rocks and earth. The thing they bend.
Right.
And yet they don't expect them to fight back.
And for some reason they weren't.
Yeah, that just didn't make any sense. Incidentally, that in that episode, George Takei has a part.
Oh, awesome.
Side note. But yeah, it made no sense that... first of all, why wouldn't they fight back? Which makes no sense. But why the hell would they imprison them around the thing that they could fight back with?
Yeah. But for some reason, they weren't. They had outlawed it enough, and I guess they had them frightened enough where they weren't doing... Because what was one of the things they had said? You're surrounded by Earth. You don't have to take this.
And they didn't really play it at, they didn't establish the prisoners enough to show that they were that demoralized. Aang just shows them, look what you can do, and they do it. He just gives them a quick pep talk, and suddenly they're bending all over the place. And why would a water...
the rebellion.
Mm-hmm. And why would a waterbending scroll be kept in an earthbending bender prison?
They had a collection of Skrulls.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I think they were hiding them there. I'm trying to remember what they had said. They had said it. They didn't do that in the series?
No, in the series, Katara steals it from a bunch of pirates.
Ah.
Also, another thing they don't explain, the dragon that Aang talks to Aang in the spirit world.
Which that comes more from Japanese mythology.
Well,
that...
actually, the dragon doesn't talk in this series. It's the companion of Aang's predecessor, Roku. He has a pet dragon, like Aang has Momo. Or more to the point, Appa, because Appa is airbender. Roku has Fang, his dragon.
Yeah.
Fang doesn't talk. All of those scenes are supposed to be with Roku. For some reason, they decided not to cast a Roku and made Fang talk, which made no sense. And they didn't explain it at all, either.
Well, I didn't think they did. They needed to there. I mean, the dragon, if you look in Japanese mythology, celestial dragons and spirits were the gods, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just thought they were taking from that.
Mm-hmm. I guess, it kind of worked. They did. I don't think they explained the spirit world enough. They didn't show enough of it. It's incredibly surreal in the series.
Yeah.
They just had this blue filter, and suddenly he's talking to a dragon.
Yeah. But you got, there could have been more done in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure what. It's not like they could have battles in there, could they?
Well, no, he goes to the spirit world 3 or 4 times during the course of the first series, and it's just very surreal and very well executed. A giant wolf is walking around randomly. You have a monkey with no face at one point. It's just thoroughly surreal, and I would like to have seen them do that here instead of...
Instead, he got bogged down trying to make this into a kids' movie.
Yeah.
We're just thoroughly, dumbing it down.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to cut a lot of my complaints here. There were a few things I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the scenes with Iroh and Zuko. And this wasn't from the series. This is something Shyamalan added that I actually did like. The test that they give him early on when they first capture him.
Oh, yeah.
When they first capture Aang, they give him a test where they put a candle in front of him, the flame goes up, he pours some water out in front of him, it forms into a circle, and then a rock that levitates. That I really liked, and that was completely original to the movie.
It's an easier way than, putting 1,000 toys in front of them.
I think they referenced that.
Yeah, they talked about it.
Yeah, which is straight from Buddhism. That's how they determine
Exactly.
the Dalai Lama. Oh, also, another change that I think was a good idea is his tattoos. In the series, they're solid light blue, which works fine in animation, would not have played in live action at all.
Yeah.
In the movie, they're it's line art, kind of geometric shapes, kind of henna looking,
Right.
which was a nice touch, and I think an improvement. I think that's about it for what I liked about it, though.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there were some performances that worked, some were all right, and some did not. And I think, I mean, there's some camera work that I liked out of it, but there was some cat from outer space green screen in the very beginning that was just
Yeah.
embarrassing.
And oh, also, the one of the other changes that you can debate either way. In the series, every firebender can create fire.
Right.
They shoot it out of their hands, their mouth. They don't need to take it from somewhere, all of them.
Okay.
In the movie, only the masters can do that. The average firebender has to take it from a source.
Which kind of makes more sense, actually, because, the waterbender can't just create
Everybody
water.
else does too. Yes, it makes sense. But it also, if he was going to do the trilogy, there are character moments, particularly when Aang is learning firebending, that it relies on them creating fire.
Right.
In a few episodes, that so I don't know how he could have changed that and worked around it later, but I get the logic.
Yeah.
There were also a few characters he cut that heavily factor in the second and third season. I don't think he would have been able to work around.
Right, and I was worried at first, about the whole, the Avatar being able, to bend all the elements, because I'm thinking, well, then where's really the story going to come from? And then realizing he had to learn the other three.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all
That's the
right, so
journey.
that keeps you in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is going to be the Matrix, isn't it? Where it's just going to be like, what's the
Oh,
point?
a little bit of trivia. On the set of his previous movie, Slumdog Millionaire, whenever Dev Patel had some free time, he'd watch episodes of the series to prepare for the role. He later said that he was dissatisfied with the final film. Also, Noah Ringer had to attend acting school before filming the movie. When your lead has to go to acting school before the movie, you know you're in trouble.
But that was the thing. I couldn't believe that this is the same director that had that performance out of Haley Joel Osment,
Yeah.
and he gets the performance here from Ringer. You wouldn't believe it's the same director. He's
Yeah.
known he knows how to work with kids. Why couldn't he do it this time around?
Either he had less to work with, because Haley Joel Osment is a brilliant fucking actor,
Apparently so.
or I honestly think, okay, Shyamalan claimed that, he found out about the series because his daughter wanted to dress as Katara for Halloween,
Yeah.
and she was in love with the show, and he decided to sit down and watch it, thought it could make an amazing movie, and then got in touch with Nickelodeon. I really think it turned into a paycheck role.
Yeah.
He did this to get paid. He didn't care about the source material.
He wanted a franchise.
Yeah. That's maybe more to the point, is he didn't necessarily see, the cinematic nature of the show and say, I could make a great movie out of this. He said, here is my franchise. Here is my make three movies and be set for life. And I think he really just didn't give a shit about the source material.
And that's tough to do. I mean, because suppose it was successful, and then you're pretty much, stuck with conventions and stuff for the rest of your life. And if it's source material you didn't like,
Yeah.
okay.
Well, if it had been successful, you would have had two sets of fans.
Yeah.
You would have had serious fans and movie fans.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, there's no way anybody who is a fan of the show is going to like this movie.
Right.
So then that would have been interesting. to have those two different fan bases. Oh, just one last bit of trivia. Nickelodeon did not give the film any nominations at the 2011 Kids' Choice Awards, despite the fact that it was a Nickelodeon movie. They knew that it was that bad. Mike DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, the creators of the series, have basically disavowed it.
Yeah.
When asked, they made it very clear they had nothing to do with the production of the movie and that they weren't happy with it. They've practically disowned it.
So, but he has the rights to do the other two, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, on to sequels and remakes, because otherwise it's just going to be me ranting about what they changed. And, you know.
Now, from what I'm seeing online, I saw a date for 2012.
Really? You saw specific dates?
Mm-hmm, but now I think it's been pushed to 13.
Okay, because I saw on Wikipedia, it said, while there has been much speculation regarding a sequel, no official announcement by Shyamalan or Paramount or Nickelodeon has been made regarding the go-ahead or whether the plug will be pulled on the trilogy. In July 2010, Shyamalan commented, in the next few months I'll be able to know whether or not we have the opportunity to make the movie. Then no such announcement was made by September. And when asked if he knew if the sequel would be made, he replied, I don't, because there are so many factors to take into account. I guess it will get into an area where it becomes a discussion, like pros and cons. So it sounds to me like it's dead.
Hmm.
But if they have apparently have a date, I don't see how it's going to work, because I don't think, and this is my issue overall with the movie. I mean, as a fan, I don't like everything he changed and didn't get right. But, and I mentioned this in my blog post, if you don't know the series, a lot of it doesn't make sense.
I think a lot of it, most of it did.
Okay.
I think the outline of the story pretty much makes sense. There's, like I said, there were just a couple details that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That were a little fuzzy. But of course the problem was when people died.
Well, but it's I think it basically goes from one action scene to another with just a little annoying connective narration.
Hey, could you imagine like Lord of the Rings and not a single fucking person dies? There's no peril, you know? Yeah. There's absolutely no danger. He's supposed to be looking on the battlefield in horror because people are dying.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you got people just practicing Tai Chi. He's pretty much watching people practicing Tai Chi and about the same amount of violence you'd see in a WWE Royal Rumble kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, another gripe of mine. In the series, all of the fight choreography is done by an actual martial arts master. They didn't bring him in for the movie. And as a result, it looks really cheesy.
In a way, you pretty much had... It's worse than the stuff from the samurai movies.
Yeah. Because
at least people died in those.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing to teach kids. If you play with the sword, someone's going to die or get hurt.
Yeah.
But if you just watch this movie as a kid,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they're fine.
Right.
All right, so...
On the brains.
Sequels and remakes.
Well,
all right.
We've already discussed that. You've been seeing 2012?
Right, well, I saw it's been pushed back to 13,
I think.
If at all. Which, if they're pushing it back a year and there's all this stuff going on, there is, you know, pretty much a possibility it ain't going to happen.
And now, given the reception of the first one, I don't think it will.
All right, so say we're going to remake this.
Okay.
Maybe not the not this particular brand of the movie.
No. Incidentally, on a discussion on the Revision 3 forums about movies you'd like to see remade, I actually said I would love to see a remake of this just so we can pull a Highlander 2 on the Shyamalan version.
But, clearly, Shyamalan wasn't the guy for this.
Uh-huh.
He just, I mean, this was over him. I kind of would have liked to have seen Spielberg do it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think now that you mention it, he probably could have gotten it.
Because could you imagine combining Saving Private Ryan
and
say, like, Close Encounters ET kind of thing.
Right. I think now that I would never have pulled his name out, but now that you mention it, I think Spielberg would have understood the series and would have gotten it right.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Just maybe, to me, the concept of a fantasy saving Private Ryan would just be fucking
Well,
awesome.
to be honest, there are deaths in the series, red shirts basically for the most part.
Yeah, of course.
But it doesn't go Saving Private Ryan dark.
Right. That's the thing. This is supposed to be a brutal battle. I could see that it was supposed to be a brutal battle, and I didn't see the series, but it was just, Braveheart, but nobody, oh, okay, oh, you knocked me over. But so that's who I wouldn't mind seeing directed. I'm sure there's others that could do too. But any actors or actresses that you would know of?
Let's see. I'd be tempted to cast a couple of the voice actors, just because
Nah.
they look right for the part and they already know the characters. Particularly Dante Bosco, who played Zuko in the series, who looks right for the part, and obviously he knows the character. And the actor Jack Senna is his name, who plays Sokka, I think would be right for the live action version.
Anybody would have been better than that guy that was in it.
Yeah, Jackson Rathbone, yeah.
Holy cow, that
Beyond
was a
that,
bad actor.
I wish Mako was still with us, because he'd be perfect for Iroh. He played Iroh in the series. I really can't think of anybody in particular, though, for actors beyond that. Just I think just good actors, particularly for Aang, someone who was an actor.
But he wasn't the real suspect one, I think. I
Actually,
mean,
no, he wasn't not the worst, but it's just
no.
irritating.
I think the movie could have been pulled off with him still.
Actually, keep Shon Tao. Just rewrite the part of it.
Yeah.
'Cause he was a great Iroh.
I mean, Dev Patel you could keep,
Yeah, actually I can't complain about Dev Patel. He was great. Just and actually his the Zuko in the movie was actually very close to the Zuko in the series, just
Yeah.
made a bit more sympathetic.
Yeah. So really, I think it's just Katara and Sokka, just the two that need to be changed.
And rewrite and possibly recast Zhao to be more angry and megalomaniacal. And don't show Ozai. This is another issue I had, and I mentioned this in the post.
Right.
Ozai is not seen in the first season until the last scene of the last episode.
Right, you think he would have learned a lesson from Mr. Lucas, who he was trying to take so much from in this, which is kind of what the problem in this whole movie is he's trying to channel Star Wars. Granted, he wasn't doing it as annoyingly as they were in the Harry Potter movies, but he was channeling it still.
I don't know. I still like the book. I like the books and the movies. So I really, with Harry Potter. So I don't think. I think this is a bigger. I think it's worse than the Harry Potter movies, personally.
Oh no, those Potter. I think the Harry Potter, at least the first one that I saw going head to head, the beginning of each series, I think it's way worse than this.
Wow.
That Goblet of Fire or whatever
Oh,
that
Sorcerer's
first
Stone is the
one,
first one.
Sorcerer's Stone. I mean, because the difference is, it's so smug. It's so, oh, we're the special people who, can do no wrong, and oh, poor Harry. Whereas this,
Well, that is British.
true. Whereas this, they are chosen people here still. They still have that same aspect, but they fucked up. And what I did like about this movie was that they make no problem, no bones about it. That Aang is the reason that this whole thing started in the first place. It's not just a, oh, poor. No, dude, you shirked your responsibilities, and because you did that, you've just let all hell break loose. So I think that's a much better story than the bizarre racist Harry Potter, the thinly disguised money lending Jewish characters.
Well, in the execution, yeah. Actually, ironically, if you get in, once you get into the story, there is a big, it's a whole big, you know, comment on racism is basically what the series is about.
Yeah.
But some of the characterization, yeah, it was a little dodgy.
Yeah, these giant hook noses and everything.
Yeah.
Like, what? And yet it was the Christians that were upset by the movie. Oh, boy. All right, so...
On to Brains.
On to Brains.
Like I said, there were a few things I liked about it, so I can't go completely down to the bottom, but I did take the time to create a new ratings graphic, so I'm going to go -3.
-3? Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
This is worse than Crossroads?
Oh, absolutely.
No way!
If I look at it objectively, if I look at it separate from the series, maybe not. If I consider the source material, and I have to consider the source material in my rating, yes, far worse. It's a -3.
No way. All right, I'm doing an actual objective review here. I'm going to give it 2 brains because, like I said, he's got this crazy mixed bag here. He's got a great story at its core, but he sugarcoated it under so much. Oh, I don't know what you'd want to even call it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't really whitewash a genocide to make it friendly for kids. And that's what he tried to do here. Well, and like I said, the acting was a mixed bag. And even the effects, he went the entire gamut from Cat from Outer Space to not so bad, you know.
Oppa
really
looked great. Some of the ships looked great.
Right, it's hard to be dazzled by special effects anymore.
Yeah.
You can't really... It's only when they're bad... is when they're being pointed out these days.
True.
So
and really, if I was just looking at the movie apart from the series, I'd probably go about the same.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, we've seen far worse on our journey here, and I would definitely even rate Harry Potter lower than 2.
Wow. We don't need to get into that debate right now.
I was kind of interested. I wish I'd watched, like, the Golden Compass just to compare also. You know, it'd be just this whole...
I couldn't even finish that one. I tried watching it.
I haven't sat down because it just looked terrible.
Uh-huh.
But I'm willing to bet that it would be worse than this. Also, the beginning of the Chronicles of Narnia, too.
I hated the first
that to compare. I stayed away from that one, too, because of the fucking talking lion. Who
I couldn't... Up. I watched it. I didn't like it. Anyway, what have we learned?
The funny things you can do with pies and a horse. Oh, that's last week. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No. No, I've learned absolutely nothing from this.
And I learned that while you can't improve upon perfection, you can turn it into absolute shit.
I'd say mediocrity.
Potato, patata. Anyway, until next week when we will be reviewing Dune, and I'm assuming we're going with the Lynch version here.
Yes.
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, links to find us on Facebook and Twitter, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You can also find the movie list that, you know, to see what else we've done and what we have coming up. I think, again, it's the low 100s we have planned through. Or, of course, you can suggest a movie. Or you can leave us a voicemail. The number is 414-368-Z201 or 414-368-9861 for the alphanumerically challenged. Please always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
What the country.
Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
It's time we show the Fire Nation that we believe in our beliefs as much as they believe in theirs.
It's line art, kind of geometric shapes, almost kind of hente, kind of henna look.